Joining us in our Touch Points Rehab interview chair this morning, and she makes a monthly appearance, is Michelle Siegel. She's the commissioner of the Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection. Commissioner, good morning.
Good morning. It's good to see you again.
It's the tax season, and that means IRS scams. What should we be looking for when it comes to IRS scams, especially this time of year?
Well, one thing, and scammers are pretty good about this, is they want to take advantage of what's on the top of people's minds. So you get holiday scams around the holidays. If there's a tragedy, you get scams around that. And right now, people are thinking about their taxes. And so you may not have as many red flags go up when you get a call from somebody pretending to be from the IRS or pretending to be an accountant who's there to help you. And so really, you always just want to be on the lookout for somebody who's calling you and claiming that they need money from you or that they need personal information from you. Particularly if somebody's calling and saying they're from the IRS, that's almost a sure sign they are not from the IRS.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. Are we seeing an increase over previous years at this time of year as far as scams, do you know?
I don't know that it's been an increase, but it's just always the IRS scam in particular. It's effective, presumably. So every year... we see it, and so consumers need to be aware of that, as do small business owners.
What can consumers do to avoid being a victim of the IRS? Just hang up the phone?
Absolutely. That's one great idea, is you get a call and they say they're from the IRS. It's not going to be the IRS. You're going to get a whole bunch of letters. You are not going to have a doubt in your mind that you owe the government money before you start getting phone calls. I realize some people, you feel like you're being rude. Even though this person is trying to steal your money, there's still a human being on the other end of the line, and so you don't want to hang up. So you can come up with a more polite way, but get off the phone and certainly never send them money and never give them personal information. You can say, I'll get back to you. Then call the real IRS, not the number they give you. You can say, I don't give information when I didn't initiate the call. There's polite ways, but yes, hang up.
What about emails? Do they try to scam people by way of emails?
Emails certainly are very popular and a really low-cost way if you're a scammer. You can blast out millions and millions of emails, and it doesn't cost you a cent. It doesn't really take a whole lot of time. And aside from just being on the lookout for all of a sudden you got an email from the IRS, which that should make you pretty suspicious, but, you know, if they hack into somebody else's account, and we're seeing this sometimes in school districts or small businesses, they may send you an email which it seems to you legitimately it's your coworker asking for some W-2 forms or asking for the list of employee social security numbers. Never send it over email. You see that email, call the person using the phone number you know is their real number and say, hey, did you make this request? And then come up with a secure way to give them the information. But if you're a person, maybe it's your parents or your siblings' email that got hacked, and they seem to be offering to help you with your taxes all of a sudden, again, contact the real person.
Is this when it really happens? They're really on the phones now, right?
They are. I mean, some people get the voicemail, and they give you a callback number, and they'll tell you, we're coming to arrest you in a couple of hours if you don't pay your taxes. Here's the number to call. And the government, they're not going to call you and schedule a time to arrest you like that. That's a scam. So don't call them back.
Right. Now, how does the IRS officially get in touch with somebody?
They'll do it by mail, and that's the typical way. Now, if you're in ongoing discussions with them, then there could be a phone call or some other communication, but that's not going to be the initial reach out. So if you don't think you owe money or you're not aware you owe money and you're getting a phone call, then that should be red flags, and you can hang up, call your local IRS office after you look up the number and figure it out.
Have you gotten calls at your office from people who believe they've been scammed when it comes to the IRS?
I don't know the exact numbers, but it's certainly this or similar variations of it. And oftentimes, fortunately, people are becoming more sophisticated, and they're calling to say, I wasn't scammed, or I just want to confirm I got this call. Is it a scam? Or, you know, please be aware so you can warn other people.
We're talking with our monthly guest, Michelle Siegel, Commissioner, Department of Consumer Protection. Of the calls that you get, and I was asked by someone, about this, what is the call that hits you the most, that you get the most action with? What are people really out to find the answers to? How would you classify some of your calls?
You mean just generally to the
department? Yeah.
I think home improvement contract issues are a big one. We get a lot of calls about the do not call list is probably another really popular thing that people contact us about. But so those are the two big ones that we get. And then we get a wide range on other things that more broadly fall, you know, false advertising or misrepresentations. But in terms of specific industries, it's the home improvement contractors. We get a lot of calls on that.
I can tell you, Commissioner, when it comes to the do not call list, I don't have much faith in it because I'm on that list and it doesn't seem to stop the people from calling.
It's a challenge, and it's, you know, people can call from anywhere in the world now and they can spoof their phone number so it looks like they're calling from D.C. or they're calling from Connecticut or wherever they want to make it look like they call. The one good thing, so if you're on the do not call list, legitimate law-abiding businesses will be abiding by that. So now if you get a phone call, and there are some exceptions, but basically if you get a phone call and it's not a business you've ever dealt with before, that right there should be a clue to you, okay, I'm now talking to somebody who's not following the do not call list laws. What other laws are they breaking? So it's useful in that way, but you're right. Phone calls, it's not stopping phone
so
calls.
So overseas, that's what I've heard too.
Absolutely.
That there are a lot of calls from overseas, and many times the people, when they hear as someone with a dialect, they think it's from overseas.
It could be. It couldn't be. Obviously, there's people who live in the United States with different accents as well or different dialects. But it could be from anywhere. So just because your caller ID says it's coming from the town over in Connecticut or that it's coming from your neighborhood even, that doesn't mean anything because their technology now exists where people can make it appear that they're calling from anywhere. So they could be calling halfway around the world, and your caller ID is going to show it's the IRS in Washington, D.C. And so caller ID obviously has some benefits. Everybody has it on their cell phone, a lot of people on their house phone, and you could, you know, usually you know when who's calling you. But if it's somebody you don't know, don't just trust that because the caller ID said the IRS, that is in fact the IRS.
Right. Well, let's get back to the IRS again. What should people do so that they don't fall prey to these IRS scams? What steps should they be taking?
So it's really good to think about these things in advance because when we're sitting here talking about it, it sounds, oh, of course I wouldn't fall for it, but they'll get you in this sort of state of mind where you're really fearful. They'll tell you, and it could be a small business, it could be an individual, you owe all this money, we're going to arrest you, or you're going to be paying these astronomical fines, whatever it is. They are going to threaten you with something that really has you scared, and sort of the logical part of your brain isn't focused. You're focusing emotionally on, oh my God, this awful thing's about to happen to me. So it's really important to be thinking in advance. When I get this call, what am I going to do so that you're not thinking it through at that moment? And so the key things to do, one, get off the phone. Do not ever give out personal information and don't ever give out money. So they may say, so the IRS does not need you to pay your taxes with a prepaid card. So if they're saying, you know, if you don't pay us in 2 hours, we're arresting you, get to CVS, buy yourself a prepaid card. That's just not how the IRS operates. So don't ever, because once you send them that number on the back of the card, that money is gone. It's like giving somebody cash.
And there's a lot of it now. It's incredible.
Yeah. And unfortunately, it works. So that's the other thing is if you do fall for it, don't be so embarrassed that you don't tell anyone, that you don't try to do something. Because once you fall for one of these scams, now your name and number get shared among these scammers because they know, okay, this is a person who falls for these things. So you may, for a period of time, get a whole bunch more calls. So you really need to acknowledge, okay, I had a weak moment, I got tricked, and I need to deal with that and not be embarrassed. Because it keeps happening because so many people fall for it.
Of course, another way they might try to trick you is if you can't meet what they're asking for, then they might say in the next breath, well, then at least give me your social security number, right?
Yeah, or why don't we set up a payment plan? Give me your bank account number. So things like that are, you know, really bad is you fall for it, you've given them some money, then they call you a few days later and say, hey, there's this scam going around. If I'm with the government, you know, for $100, we'll research it and try to get you your money back. And now you're falling for a second scam because they're going to take advantage of the fact that you fell for the first one.
You have time to take a call?
Oh, sure.
Let's go to Ken in Coventry. I believe Ken is on line two, so let's go to Ken in Coventry. Ken, go ahead.
Yes, I had a question. I had a solicitation from a major hotel chain about a credit card, like a Visa credit card. And on the email, when you fill out the information that they ask for, one of the items is the Social Security number. So I was hesitant in doing that. I haven't done it yet, and I was wondering if it's advisable to do that in an email or a credit card application.
I would be very suspicious, and I would, not knowing more, recommend against that. And as in particular, I would, if I were you, make sure that's even the hotel that's emailing you. You know, is this a hotel you were at, and did you request that they send you a credit card application? Because normally hotels are not going to just send you a credit card application out of the blue. So you may want to first, before doing anything, get the phone number for this hotel and ask, hey, are you sending out credit card applications to people? Because if they're not, they may want to know that information so that they can try to take steps to stop other people from being fooled with their name. You could maybe save some other people, too.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Ken, thanks for the call. You know, and it's interesting because...
That's great stuff.
Yeah, but what entities out there should you be giving your Social Security number to? Anybody? I mean, I'm very guarded with that.
Certainly over email and things like that, I would be very cautious. So there's certain places, so you may be, if you're on an employment application, or there may be banks that need that information, but you want to be super sure that it's the legitimate organization that in somebody who maybe would have a legitimate reason to want to run a credit check on you. You know, you're taking out a loan, banks are going to want to do things like that, but always ask, like, why do you need this information? What are you using it for? What are your policies to protect it if you have any doubts whatsoever?
Okay. Do you have a couple more minutes to stay through the break?
Sure.
Okay.
That's great. Terrific. That's terrific. Okay, coming up to 10 minutes before the hour, my friends, of 9 o'clock. Been a very interesting morning. And once a month, Michelle comes in here, and we'll get right back to her. Stay with us.
I'm Jennifer Kuschenko with Your Money Now. Walmart investors are hoping today's a better day. The retailer, which had improved its e-commerce operations over the past year in its fierce battle with Amazon, stumbled in the fourth quarter after misjudging its online inventory for the holiday season, sending its stock tumbling and slicing more than $31 billion from its market cap. Walmart shares fell more than 10% yesterday, their biggest one-day drop in more than 2 years. Opponents of the Keystone XL oil pipeline from Canada are asking a judge to force the U.S. government to turn over emails and other documents related to President Trump's approval of the project. Environmentalists who have sued to stop the pipeline say the documents could bolster their case that Trump's decision was arbitrary and should be overturned. But government attorneys say the documents include internal deliberations that don't have to be made public. Crude oil down 33 cents at $61.46 a barrel on Wall Street. Futures pointing to a mixed open this morning. That's Your Money Now.
It is 8:51. Say, by the way, anybody thinking about retirement? Well, if you are, I want you to call my friends, and they'll take care of it all. The trusted professionals at the Cowan Tax Group. That's for individual tax preparation at $199, which also includes, now listen to this, all schedules and retirement and investment tax planning. That's right, all of it. And you got to be proactive about managing your taxes, and I know that you know that. And let me tell you something, the Cowan Tax Group will help you out. The Cowan Tax Group, this is for individual tax preparation at $199, which includes everything. As I mentioned, schedules, retirement, investment tax planning, and the Cowan Tax Retirement Group, the whole family. Once you meet them, you'll know what I mean. They're the best. And here's their telephone number, 860-676-1100. 860-676-1100. 1100. The Cowan Tax Group.com will take good care of you.
The workmen in Torrington remind us that respect and care for our senior citizens should always be a priority in our society. We owe much of today's success to our seniors because of their hard work and sacrifice. During National Older Americans Month, let us remember our seniors and wish them well. That's courtesy of the workmen, 244 Forest Street in Torrington. They're always working to keep our community moving in a positive direction. Call 860-482-0016 for more information. The workmen of Torrington.
And, Brad, we are back with the commissioner from the Department of Consumer Protection, Michelle Siegel. We're going to take one more question from a caller, Steve in Hartford. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Hi, Commissioner.
Morning.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just want to applaud the state for a great medical marijuana program as a patient and caregiver. One of the big problems now is that there's limited product that are given to the dispensaries for patient use, which either forces patients to go without. So I think by adding additional dispensaries is going to be a detriment, whereas adding more grow facilities, I think, would help produce the product that helps patients. This is a pharmaceutical platform, so you know, it's like going to your local, you know, drugstore.
Okay, Steve, we're running out of time, so let's have the commissioner address that. Commissioner, what about that?
Well, first, thank you for your opening compliment. We've worked really hard in this program, and we're always happy to know that when it's helping patients or caregivers with their family. Certainly, the supply-demand issue is always a challenge, and this program, because of its success, has grown dramatically. I think we went from close to 8,000 patients a couple years ago to over 23,000 patients now. And, of course, this is not medicine that you can turn around really quickly. There is a fair amount of lead-up time. So sometimes when you see some market disruptions, some of it is simply because it's a new program and it's seeing some tremendous success, the businesses themselves need to adjust to accommodate that. So we are always evaluating these situations, and we take that seriously.
Can I ask how come that they want to add more dispensaries and not more growth facilities to have the product?
All right, Steve. Okay, we'll let her answer that question before we wrap up our interview.
So the dispensaries is important. We also get concerns from patients about prices, so injecting more competition into the market. It also, with only 9 throughout the state, there's patients who have to drive a considerable distance. So by having more dispensaries, we can assist with that as well.
Commissioner Siegel, always a pleasure.
Terrific.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for joining us. You bet.
5 minutes before the hour of 9.